This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to a special Easter bonus edition of the Blue Monday podcast preview show. That's a mouthful, isn't it, Harry? with me, your host Richard Woodward, and the brilliant aforementioned Harry from Bath. Harry, good to see you again.
All good.
We won't do the kind of acting and pretend that we've just had a lovely Good Friday and we've smashed Preston 4-0. Let's keep Preston to one side, and we'll focus specifically on Swansea, shall we, today. But you're doing well.
Yeah, all good here. We broke off. If anybody listened to the Preston show, we recorded it on Wednesday evening, and at the time Tottenham, I think, were 2-1 up against Manchester City. Did you get to watch the rest of it?
So it was 2-2 when we left, when we stopped recording. I went downstairs and Sterling scored the third. That was a crazy game of football. I don't know if you saw it.
I mean, the man
of the match was VAR. I mean. Plenty of debates to be had on VAR, but Frank, the good thing, I guess, and Joe Fares made this point on Twitter, I think it was, or even on the Blue Monday WhatsApp group, at least in League One, we're very much a long way away from the risks of VAR ruining our enjoyment of football, so hopefully they'll sort that one out.
Leave it to the referees.
Exactly right. I need to do a couple of plugs. So in terms of format, we'll focus specifically on Swansea. We've got a few more questions to go through from Twitter, but I'd quickly just like to mention the Turnstile Blue folks, who've got a new edition coming out on Monday, available before the Swansea game, for the usual amazing, frankly, price of £1. I think it's edition number 20 as well. So congrats to the guys on that. Contents this time around, Gavin gives an overview of the 17 years that we've had in the Championship, ups and downs. Steve has got something similar, actually, to the kind of sliding doors moments video that we put out, kind of these kind of missed opportunities since 2001. There's something on the club's welcome efforts to improve the relationship with the fans. There's an interview with 83-year-old fan Arthur Winchester, who can remember Division 3 South, probably one of the minority of people who can remember what it's like to see Ipswich in the third tier, and we'll all be familiar with that, unfortunately, in a few months' time. Matt's got something on governance, or lack of, at Portman Road, and Rob's got something about financial fair play. So on sale 1:30 on Monday, ahead of the Swansea game. Go and see the chaps and chapesses that will be dotted around the ground. They may or may not be in the Greyhound if the Greyhound is open on Easter Monday, but always a good read. Always good to have different perspectives and views on things going on at ITFC. Go and give them your support. Harry, shall we jump straight into Swansea?
Let's do that.
It's a difficult one for us, really, this one. Again, I guess I'll lead off with a similar caveat from our Preston show, that Easter Monday, hectic weekends of hectic week of fixtures might lead to some unforeseen rotations. So we'll do our best to kind of call out the key players and some stuff that might happen. But obviously, we can't legislate for some random youth player or someone who's been frozen out of the team suddenly reappearing to prove themselves the last few weeks. An up and down season for Swansea, relegated obviously from the Premier League. Graham Potter took over, and it's a case of kind of, they got a bit of a run, don't they, and then suddenly get an absolute battering and then go on another bad run and then swing it back round. And so they find themselves in 13th at the time of recording, which I guess, given that kind of up and down spiky type season that they've had, is no surprise. But there is some quality in that team, isn't there, that perhaps suggests that maybe they could have done better out of this season. But does it feel like a rebuild to you, Harry, with Potter? It's all a bit new for him, isn't it? And off the field, starting to maybe regain some of the stuff that we think of when we think of Swansea, which is kind of everything's the word you use, progressive. Everything's kind of well considered and well managed and very much a club of that city. Is this season maybe about reconsolidating after maybe losing their way a bit and going doubling up their efforts next season?
Yeah, I'd agree with that totally. It's been a proper rebuild. I think it was something like 14 players left in the summer, and then there's a few like Boney. I think he's out on loan at some in Qatar. He's disappeared off the scene. It's very much it's at the beginnings of starting again, and it comes through in that some of the recent games that they've played. They've won 3 and lost 3 of their last 6 league games, and sometimes it all comes together and it works brilliantly, such as when they beat Stoke and Middlesbrough. And I think Stoke had 2 players sent off by the end of it. They destroyed Brentford 3-0, but then just as equally, the game before Easter, they lost 4-0 and lost badly the Saturday before Easter.
Yeah.
I don't know, against Queen's Park Rangers. And we'll come on and talk about that. But if you watch one highlights video, Swansea put up a really nice, it'll be on the TWTD notes over the weekend, but it's well worth watching. It's an absolutely barmy game of football. They are such a Jekyll and Hyde team. But that, as I say, is a function of where they are at the moment. They're, you know, the team is being... It's been completely dismantled, and elements of it are coming together brilliantly, but elements of it are equally just imperfect. And we had that great win back in October, and a lot of that was we just caught them. We caught the imperfect version of Swansea that day. So it'll be fascinating to see which version turns up actually on Monday. It'll be absolutely fascinating.
Quick word on Potter, who I think was linked with our vacancy as well. I think the last preview show that we did on Swansea, we talked about him as very. Again, progressive manager, but also very fluid in his tactical... Well, even if there is kind of a... Tactical is probably the right word, but happy to let players kind of drift around and deal with phases, and it's less about 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1 or whatever. It's more zones of the field and all that kind of stuff. Is that evolved, or is he kind of had to rein that kind of sensibility in because he's in the Championship and it's a little bit different?
Well, we saw a version of it in the 3-2 over the win we had over the Liberty when he took off a centre back and just threw an extra winger on, which was just bonkers. It's been a little bit more stable than that. It has been more of a 4 at the back, a more stable 4. He has played a 3, but it's generally been 4 lately. And then 2 sitters in midfield, and then the wingers and the 2 wide men and the 2 front men, 2 central front men, that's where the fluidity really is now. It's more that than anything else. But it's worth, Potter's an interesting one. They do like him. They really like him. They've said that, I mean, the one lovely quote I found was that they've said results are inconsistent, but they have enjoyed watching us more this year. And they talk about style, they talk about togetherness, and they talk about Potter's emotional and intellectual maturity. He seems to be a perfect fit. One of them said that there's a little bit of a feel of Brendan Rodgers' time about where we are at the moment, but obviously with a less developed squad, hence the inconsistency. So one of them says he's taking us back to where we were, inexpensive but technically good squad playing good football. We have some real prospects who will make mistakes and who will need support behind them. So please be patient is the kind of the narrative that's going on there. They've done this before. They've seen a team build with a philosophy and a way of playing. I describe them as the original progressives in many ways. Do you remember when they came? They absolutely destroyed us in their promotion season. I remember
Paulo Sousa's team, I think they beat us possibly 4-0 twice. I think 3-0 home, 4-0 away.
Yeah.
That's why there's no shirts from that season behind us, by the way. We'll talk about shirts at the end. We had a pretty poor record against them in those promotion
but
seasons.
But that didn't happen over one season. That happened over three or four seasons.
A bit of an assembly line of managers there as well. And Potter's kind of a similar ilk to that. But I think, was it Rodgers who took them up through the playoffs against Reading? I'm trying to remember that.
Yes, it was Reading. It was Reading. I remember that.
But they had, Martinez was there and Palacios, we've mentioned, and Brendan Rodgers was there and Laudrup as well. It was the Premier. It was when the anxiety about their Premier League status kicked in, that, and also the change of owners. Is who Jenkins still around there?
Jenkins is. He's treated with a little bit of sort of slightly cynical eye, because I think he may have made a lot of money out of the sale of the club. I could be wrong on that, but he's treated with a little bit of wariness, I think is a polite way of putting it.
They
lost their way. It was the American North. I think it was Bob Bradley, wasn't it, who came in, the
and
former
a couple
American
of others
manager.
In yeah. there too. Yeah.
Just, yeah, and yeah. And Carvajal, they said about him, I was reading, they said that he came up with one idea, and once that didn't work, he was kind of standing, basically he was like a rabbit in the headlights. Oh dear. But you can see, so it's a complete reset. That's the best way to describe it with Potter. They do like him. One of them said it's not just the kind of the rebuilding of the club, but there's a lot of individual work. And we'll come on and talk about Daniel James, the kind of the winger who's absolutely set, has had an absolute breakthrough season. But they've talked about, for example, the incredible work he's doing on a one-to-one with individual players, which they do like as well. But there are imperfections in the team, and they're the first to admit that. But note that they like Potter. There's a strong sense of direction. It may take a couple of seasons, but once it's properly reset, then they think they can have a go. The other thing is they're enjoying life in the Championship, actually. I think when they were in the Premier League and it was going really well and they had that model of play and they could overperform, it was brilliant. But then once they fell into that kind of Huddersfield kind of trap,
it's just nasty, isn't it?
Survival. Then the fun went out of it. So I think the Championship has been, they've kind of settled back into the chaotic groove of Championship life. Interesting.
Shall we start at the back and work our way forward then? Because I know you've got some interesting stuff on the goalkeeper Nordfeldt. So shall we start with him?
Yeah. We need to talk before we do anything else. Let's talk about set pieces.
Oh, okay.
As I say, I know I keep going on about this.
Well, we've scored a winner with a set piece there, didn't we?
We did indeed. So. Yeah. It is. There's one particular moment in that highlights video, and I can only describe it as a school playground mill.
This is from the 4-0, the QPR.
Yeah, this one, the 4-0 against QPR on the last Saturday. The ball gets crossed in, Nordfeldt doesn't hold it, he palms it down almost, and then you've suddenly got eight players converging on the ball in the 6-yard box with the goalkeeper, and it's just everybody just hacking away at the ball. It's the only way I could describe it. It could go anywhere, and eventually it dribbles out for a corner. The commentators are hilarious on it. This is not unusual. There was something like 3-0 down after 15 minutes. Two set pieces and a long ball basically did for them. Nordfeldt is, I'm afraid, at the heart of that. They lost Erwin Mulder, the keeper. He broke his finger. He was the keeper who Nordfeldt was very much the backup, but Mulder out of the picture. Nordfeldt has stepped in.
I just have to say, for a melee in the penalty area, I always now expect someone to do a Jimmy Bullard kind of run and jump over the crowd of players like he did for Wigan. I think it was against Everton, possibly. All I can think of now. He's kind of ruined that for me. But
it's like American football with a touchdown, isn't it? Really, you just pile in over the top. I think the problem is they like to have a goalkeeper. Potter likes a keeper who will play out from the back, which is what they want. But the problem is his reactions are incredibly poor. One of them said that they asked what's he got in his shoes. Studs or 12-inch nails. He's permanently stuck on the goal line. Own players, they don't trust him. He stands there and he doesn't own the box. Potter's sacrificing decent goalkeeping for superior distribution. And they say, well, that's fine in foreign leagues, but they said he's a good keeper in a less physical league, but totally unsuited to English football in that sense. You can't keep giving teams soft goals. It'll be interesting to see. We're recording this ahead of their Rotherham game, and they have got a German backup keeper called Stephen Bender, who... It's a great name for a goalkeeper. But they say he seems... I don't know whether he'll feature. He hasn't featured at all. He's very much a number three, but given that they've nothing left riding on the season, he might get a look in. He seems to be the complete opposite to Nordfeld. His biggest issue was coming out for balls too often. He'll charge out for things that he probably isn't going to get to, including stuff outside the area. Can we look? Well, play him. Please play him. We want to see that.
Let's have some drama.
Exactly. So you've got to, it's the two complete extremes. That is a huge weak link in the defence. Probably the biggest one, actually, I would say. In the team, the three central defenders are interesting. The strongest widely is seen as Mike van der Hoorn. He's really grown. He was player of the year by a country mile. His physique, one of them said, and they can speak authoritatively on this. They said he wouldn't look out of place on a rugby pitch. He's got that physicality to him. But again, the problem with him, and also when they play Cameron Carter-Vickers alongside him in a centre-back pairing, is he can't aerially command the six-yard box. They don't have any six-foot giants in this team. This is a real problem.
Even Carter-Vickers who's quite stocky, isn't he? But he's not that tall, is he?
He's not tall. And they talk about Van der Hoorn. He's way too slow, lacking imagination and possession. And they say about the head like a Toblerone is the version the 50 PPCs. He's not that necessarily confident on the ball. He is a good solid defender though, in terms of he can shut down a striker. If you were to put him, say Will Keane was playing, and you put him on Will Keane, he could do a number just to nullify a striker. But occasionally he does get. He gets it into his head that one of them said, I think it was a goal against Stoke. They said he suddenly made them think he was suddenly Messi, and off he'd get the ball. He'd go off these mad, mazy dribbles through as many Stoke team as he could. But he can play the odd decent diagonal ball out, but definitely the strongest of the defenders. And then there's a toss-up between Joe Rodon and Cameron Carter-Vickers. And Carter-Vickers has been as the man in possession. Briefly on Rodon, he is probably the more physical defender, and he's risky with the ball on his feet. He does get caught out, but he is more adventurous with the ball on his feet as well. He's bigger than the other two strikers. They say he's quicker as well physically, but he can be a liability on the ball. Whereas Carter-Vickers is praised for his ball work, but his distribution can be too safe.
Yeah,
he's got very high pass percentages, but very low numbers passing forward. He does simple backwards and sideways.
But that's his job, isn't it? I mean, we saw that last season with Carter-Vickers, because you know exactly what you're going to get. And that's why you probably need a blend of the pair of them, don't you?
Yeah.
Now, we talked about the Birmingham City back two that kind of complement each other, and maybe they haven't figured that out. Maybe ironically, it's Rodon and Carter-Vickers that actually is the better pairing there.
That's true.
Rather than Van der Hoorn, but...
Yeah, they fear they may lose Van der Hoorn in the summer. He might be one of the ones, as the money diminishes, he could be one to go. But would they be able to then afford to sign Carter-Vickers from Spurs, because he's obviously on loan there? He's not their player. Interesting. Some of them think he could be a fullback actually because he doesn't have the physicality.
Carter-Vickers, you mean?
Carter-Vickers.
He could play right back. I'm not sure.
Whether he could or not. But the other minor comment just to add, and this is why Mick loved him, several of them said this, I don't remember him making many mistakes. For Mick that's safe. The fullbacks, they always have less to say about them, but Conor Roberts,
probably people know about Carl Norton because he's been around for quite a bit, played for Spurs. Conor Roberts was the one I was going to pick out and just see if you'd got any insights on him.
Nothing more than the fact that they really like him. He's a very good up and down right back. He's blossomed this season. He's a youth product, Wales international actually.
Five goals actually.
Yeah, he is. He has got that attacking dimension to him. He will get forward. He can put in some very good crosses, and he's a good overlapping right back. This is perfectly about his level at the moment. And the sense they have with him is that as the team progresses, so could he progress, if that makes sense. It's just a really neat fit. Sometimes you'll see a player who might have outgrown or may not be quite up to pace with where the team is. Roberts just seems to be just perfectly at that level at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah. That's quite good. And on the left side, Kyle Naughton again. Now, this is an interesting one. He picked up with Martin Olsson out because he picked up a serious Achilles injury. Naughton is really the only left back they have, so lack of cover is an issue. And when he went off injured in the Queen's Park Rangers game, they ended up moving Carter Vickers. They ended up putting Grimes in. They had a centre back in, a midfielder in there first, holding midfielder switched out, and then Carter Vickers moved across. But Naughton again, another really safe pair of hands. Yep. You know, he's a solid, powerful, no nonsense defensive leader, and you know he's done an absolutely safe and solid job for them all year. So there's not much coming from there. Again, looking at his experience, he's 30, so you're getting the benefit of the experience without the downside of age, if you get my drift. And he fits in quite neatly. As I say, the one weak link in that defence is the keeper, really, and that's the thing that we need to try and win set pieces, free kicks, corner kicks, long throws, whatever it takes, just put the ball into the 6-yard box and just get your popcorn out, basically.
I was thinking if we're trying to make a bit of money in the summer, then maybe we can flog them one of ours. But I says, well, or Bart's the one that's going to command a fee. But if his distribution's never been too good, so maybe that's not a fit there. But
yeah, they really want a sweeper keeper. That's very much Potter's way of operating. Yeah,
it is. Interesting. Holding midfield, then there's a few injuries there. Leroy Fursley, probably. I think he's returned to training.
He's come back in again
this week, but probably maybe it's a bit too soon for him. Yeah. Well, as we said, they've got Rotherham before they play us on the Monday. So you never know, he might be on the bench. But Carroll as well is a name that probably people are familiar with. And is he out as well?
He's out. He had hip surgery, I think. You won't see him. No, he's gone as well. So they really are down.
Bare bones, as Harry Moreno would say.
Yeah, bare bones in central midfield. The two most likely to play, the two who have played most regularly, are George Byers and Matt Grimes. Byers is 22, a Watford youth product, and Grimes came across a few years ago from Exeter. He's a 23-year-old, a really highly rated prospect.
I was going to say, not names that people are going to know, though, are they?
Yeah, when we looked at Grimes in the October game, he was very much seen as a defender, but he's now very much the holding midfielder, and he's probably the strongest of them. He has really blossomed. He's also versatile, which we've talked about before. That can be a strength or a weakness. He can play as a central midfielder, as a holding midfielder. He can play left midfield. He can also play left back. And in one game earlier in the spring, they talked about him dropping in as a centre back. He has that about him, but they do like him. His passing range is good. He's he has a little bit of bite. He does get stuck in, and they can see him progressing with the team. You know, they said the right player, the right manager, the right time, and you know, particularly if they expect to lose Fair and Van der Horn, who would be two of the defensive linchpins in the team, in the centre of the team, I should say. You have a holding midfielder, or holding to central midfielder Fair, and then Van der Horn behind him. Grimes would be, you know, here you go, mate. Here's your opportunity to blossom and take on that role with them both gone.
Similar stuff to what we were talking about, Preston, with Stockley and the other guy who came through from Exeter as well. Kind of players that have been integrated into the squad slowly but surely. I'm looking for my notes that I've just lobbed on the floor.
Jordan Story.
This is the time to blood them, isn't it? You know, there's nothing riding on the season. Give the first team football. If the bigger name players are sold off in the summer, they've got that first team experience. You're not kind of, it's not a whole team of inexperienced players, is it, either? So, you know, in strategic positions where you can kind of give these guys minutes, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, we should have been doing, but you can understand them, and it makes sense, and it's worked for Preston as well. So, fingers crossed for those three.
Doing it in a managed process is
exactly
the trick.
Right.
As I said, we talked about this when we were chatting about Preston. The way, you know, you don't just chuck them all in and hope to God it works. You've got to bring them through. So, but there's enough good quality in the rest of the Swansea squad for them to be able to, you know, you've got other experienced and higher caliber players. It's a safe way to do this. I mean, Mick, to be fair, was good at doing that too. Again, you know, it's again that balance. It can't all be experience. You have to bring players in. Byers is an interesting one. He's less further down the tracks than Grimes, George Byers. He's they like him, but he gets his head down sometimes when he isn't playing well. One of them described him in the Queen's Park Rangers game as being particularly awful in the sea of awfulness, which was when you're getting done 4-0. But they do think he's really progressed through. He has less of a football brain than Grimes. He can get sloppy when he's doing well, and he struggles when he's up against it. So he isn't quite up there yet. They also feel he's less of a holder. He's more of a central midfielder. He should be playing further forward up the field. How old is he? You know, he's talking a 22-year-old. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them said this earlier in the season. They felt he was primarily a number 10, but he does get caught in possession, taking the wrong options. But it'll come in time. But him and Grimes in midfield, they've been pretty industrious. And to be fair, when you look at those two and you look at our midfield, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to match them. And in that part of the field, of course, they will play somebody in advance of that. But as we'll come on and talk about in a minute. But the other plan B there, Jay Fulton, who is came from Falkirk a few years ago, 25, and he's they've had a lot less to say about him. He is very much a plan B. He came off the bench against Queen's Park Rangers. They describe him as a decent destroyer, but he has to be better in possession. So when they did the rejig, he came in as a holding midfielder. But he's poor with the ball. They described him as being like 10 men because he just doesn't have that quality in possession. But he's good at breaking up attacks. So he would be more similar to Grimes in that sense.
He won't go for a Swansea unless he figures out the big good with the ball bit of the game.
Exactly. It's what you do with the ball that matters.
In terms of the kind of attacking midfield and strikers, should we deal with this as a big mass? Because as you say, this is where there's a bit of fluidity. The big names that people want to hear about are Salina, James and McBurney. But there's Routledge in there as well. I think Nathan Dyer is still around as well.
It's a mixture of quality and experience.
But they're
really
all kind of rotating around, aren't they? And McBurney's kind of got 19 goals, which is pretty impressive. But your view or the view of the Swansea fans is that he's not a kind of out and out front man.
Yeah. They don't think he's not the striker that they need. I think that he's got 19. Apart from the 19, it's the old Jordan Rhodes thing, you know. Apart from the 30 goals a season, what else is he bringing to the team? You've got to love it. Oh God, he's a finisher, for goodness sake. I think the problem is it's such an ill-defined attacking model that they have at the moment. It's probably the thing. You can see the defence taking shape. You can see the balance of the back six, as it were, beginning to fall together. But it's what's happening in the final third is very much. It's very out of focus at the moment, and it will take time. So let's start with McBurney, will we? As we're on him, the issue with him, they, as I say, lots of wingers, lots of creative midfielders, lots of number 10 type players, and then how do you fit a striker in around that? McBurney isn't an out and out number 9. He's a kind of striker come left winger. And he doesn't necessarily want to play up against the centre-back. He feels more comfortable at times dropping back. But they also say that he isn't really a number 10. So but he has this instinct to drop deep and try and get involved in the game. He's great with the ball at his feet. He's not so great, yet again, with the ball in the air, which contributes to the defensive problems they have at set pieces. Often a striker will come back and kind of get stuck in and help out. One of them said this. They said, I think I referred to him in the past disparagingly as an excitable puppy, always trying to be in everybody else's position all of the time. So he's not doing it maliciously. He's not being greedy or anything, but it's just... It's
directed energy or something.
Yeah, it's almost that he's instinctive rather than tactical, if that makes sense. Right. He likes to play in spaces that Salina takes up, because Salina will... You know, he will play as a second striker. He will drop off, and he's the square peg of the bunch. And they're trying to. One that says, unfortunately, Potter has had issues all season trying to accommodate him in a way that gets the best out of everyone. But he gets you 19 goals a season.
Oh, man, that's a really difficult debate, isn't it?
It's fascinating. It really is. So, what's he done lately? It's interesting. What he has done is he's used Wayne Routledge
as the front man, hasn't he?
He has. It's been interesting because Routledge would see him as a winger and a right winger, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
What you've seen happen in the past, they talked about this in the Stoke win. They beat Stoke 3-1 in the game before things fell apart at Loftus Road. You had McBurnie playing up with Routledge playing off, and then they'd flip over and Routledge would play up and McBurnie would play off, and then occasionally they'd bring Nathan Dyer into the equation, and Nathan Dyer, who was on the right, would then swing infield, Routledge would then drift outside, and so they were just, this was the fluidity that I was talking about. They were drifting in and out of different positions, and in a way Routledge is very good, as is Dyer, to be able to do that, because Routledge is what, 34 now, Dyer is 31. They've got a lot of experience, so they'll know how to read the geometry of what's going on. They love Routledge. He's likely to go. They talk. I don't know what his salary is.
It'll be chunky, won't it?
It will be. They were talking about on the Swansea forum. Now, it's obviously that what they're saying. They were saying he was on something in around the 30,000 a week kind of level.
Which,
parachute payments. You know, would he be prepared to drop to five? You know, is the question. You know, you might say, well, he could look at possibly not. Who knows? But they do say for his age, he's got a spark of energy. He will run at the opposition and go past them. They feel with him, he's a player who can stretch defences with a threat in behind and run the right channels. He does that really, really well. So you can see him and McBurnie, it's all about mobility and it's all about pulling and creating spaces and sort of unlocking defences very much. But his work rate as well, they love Routledge. He's an absolute professional. Mm. They say he may not have the energy or gas he has as a youngster, but he has the technical ability, he has the skills, and he reads the game very well.
He's quite clever, isn't he? As you say, he was an out-and-out kind of winger, and he was just known for that kind of really surging pace. But he's actually, of late, become really smart, actually. I've seen him winning quite a few fouls, you know, like kind of those clever players just know how to draw an opposition foul.
They talk about his hold of play as well. If they need to draw the heat off the defence, he's more than willing to do that, no question at all. So you can see it. You look at Routledge and McBurnie as a, as almost like it's a slightly bizarre front two, if that makes sense. But in the sense that they can drift around and pop up in unexpected places. I don't know how you fix that. Do you bring in a Murph? Do you bring in a Matt Smith? Do you bring in an out and out number nine? Or does that then make the whole thing very two-dimensional, you know, where you just literally, you've got that line leader who then acts as a focal point, and then, because it's such a technically based team, you almost do want your number nine to be playing facing the goal rather than with his back to goal feeding everybody else in. I don't know the answer. It'd be fascinating
it's
to see what
crazy, isn't it? Because I guess the question you've got to ask is McBurnie going to get 19 goals next season? Because if he is, then keep doing what you're doing, right? I mean, the defence is the issue, because they'll score three goals in three matches in a row and win, and then get smashed by QPR. And they're defending from set pieces, as you say, is shaky as well. So that's not the problem. But if McBurnie's a bit unorthodox and doesn't fit, and you can get someone better who is, then I guess you change it. But I mean, statistically, it's a really you know, if you look at the facts, the stone cold facts, you can't take out a player who's scored, he'll end up on over 20 goals, won't he, unless he gets injured.
He will do.
You can't take that player out of the team, I don't think.
Yeah. You can also argue that unpredictability is a strength.
Exactly right. If they're popping up in pockets and rotating around for a less organised defence, which you could argue that we might be, that's probably quite a dangerous thing to be facing up against.
Yeah. It's hard to read the danger. Yeah. It's very hard to read the danger. Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Dyer, worth mentioning, we'll come on and talk about the left wing in a minute, but Dyer on the right wing, he's solid rather than spectacular, and I think he's actually a very good foil for Roberts with his experience. He works hard and tracks back. He can drift in and out of games. He's also been criticised occasionally for overplaying and letting a moment pass, if you know what I mean, where he's suddenly, the portal is opened, and by the time he realises, bang, it's gone, so he's lost it. But he is, his experience, and as a foil for Roberts on that right side, is very useful. And as I was saying, he's clever enough to be able to drift inside and allow Routledge in particular to drift out to the right. Whereas I think if McBurnie's going to drop in any direction, he will drift leftwards or drift backwards, as it were. Dyer is, you know, a very experienced player to have whilst bringing, you know, to bring the best out of those around him, really, I would say. Yeah.
Should we finish up with the two big names then? Should we start?
Yeah.
Selina is a difficult one. Harry's been doing, as always, really detailed research and you've kind of found a few bits and pieces on Selina. Nothing kind of huge, not, you know, huge paragraphs going, how brilliant is Bersant Selina. It's kind of, you know, he's good. He's probably had a season that they would have expected from a Premier League player taking a step down, but has not set the world alight. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, he's kind of, usually you get masses when somebody is absolutely scintillating, or masses when they're like with the goalkeeper, you know, there was too much information almost, so they're all piling in to say how bad he is. Celina, what we can say about him is they love him. They like the fact that they think he fits in with Potter's style. Potter wants him to express himself, which is something that Mick may not have had so positive a way of seeing things that way. You know, he's
very diplomatic, Harry.
Yes, exactly.
Get on the bench, and if they shout for you, you're not coming on. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, but you'll feel loved. Exactly. No, they and he still gives them heart attacks occasionally with his. He can be slightly avant-garde with the ball.
Yeah,
and
we know all about
But that fits the team. You know, they're a team that has permission to make mistakes. That's the way it works. And they like him buzzing around in the spaces behind the striker. That hasn't changed. His great first touch, his eye for a pass. He's such a locksmith.
Really great goal against us, wasn't it?
You know? Yes, it was. Yeah, that's what he will do. And in that sense, they do like him. The key word they keep referring to is that they talk about, at times, although McBurnie scores all the goals, they feel sometimes they're more effective with Celina playing,
okay.
If that makes sense, that they just feel he's got more of a threat, he's more incisive. So it could be for Potter that the issue is not so much that you replace McBurnie, but if you're going to get another striker in, who's the striker who will fit with what Celina can do? And of course, the issue is with James now sort of blasting onto the scene on the left, therefore you're seeing Celina now playing much more of a number 10 role. Though again, if you look at the highlights videos when they're playing, occasionally you'll see Celina drifting outside, and you'll see not so much that James is playing is a number 10, but he's playing kind of left, just to the left of the penalty area, with Celina having flicked right around on the outside of him. So they do this. You know, it's the fluidity thing again.
I was going to say fluid, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But no, they, you know, they're very, very happy with him. And you know, if you give him space, or if with the movement of space is created for him, he can really hurt you. My guess is against us, depending on who we're playing, it could be depending on how Skuse is. But this could be a game one for Skuse to look, if Celina's in there, just man mark him and just try and nullify that aspect of it. But but the problem is, he will hair off out to the left and, you know, decide he's going to go over and say hello to Josh Emmanuel or James Free, whoever's over there. It's something that obviously Lambert has to work with.
Yep.
So Celina, generally good news. And then on the left, you've got young Mr. James.
Yeah, with pace to burn.
Absolutely. And it's fascinating. When we looked in October, I normally, on the notes I do for TWTD, most players will get two paragraphs. Fringe players, I'll just put in one little paragraph, a few comments just in case they come off the bench. Daniel James was a 20-year-old, one-paragraph youth product, in the sense that he was just, look, he's a fringe player, we might see him. And of course, after 15 minutes of watching the game at the Liberty, we realised, no, this guy deserves, if not two, at least three or four paragraphs. This guy is something else. He was, I mean, it didn't help that game that... Hurst was playing defenders all out of position. He completely messed up our defence. But James ruthlessly exploited that. And at the time, they described him as an admirable player, but not quite ready yet. You know,
he's off the
required standard. You know, this is what 6 months ago, and look where we are now. He has blasted onto the scene to the point that they're now worried, thinking that he could be their equivalent of James Maddison.
But only a part of the season, though. Madison had a season at Coventry doing really well, a season at Aberdeen, I think, and then a season and a half with Norwich. So, I mean, this is the Premier League that we're talking about now. Someone will take a punt on him, won't they? Because they can get him now for $5 million rather than a year's time when he's $11 million like Madison was. It probably feels like one of these ones where you buy him and loan him back to Swansea, don't you?
It could be that, or possibly we'll see who gets relegated. A team, you know, was it Tom Ince went up to Huddersfield? Didn't quite work out from there. It's risky from James'
point.
For
him, exactly right.
Yeah, the reason, I guess, the question is whether how good is he? Let's get the silly stuff out of the way. One of them, they said he's a bigger prospect than Sterling of Manchester City. What a future he has. Pace to burn, 21 years of age.
The new Gareth Bale.
Enjoy him while he's with us. But this guy, the guy who put that up, was absolutely shot down in flames. Behave, the lad's a decent prospect. But that's it at the moment.
Raheem Sterling, he's not yet.
Now, Sterling, he's not, but if you watch some of the highlights, there's definitely a touch of Tom Lawrence. In other words, if one of the things they talked about as he was really coming through was that the rest of the team wasn't up on his wavelength, and he'd suddenly find himself through into space, but not much support.
He scored a load of goals like that, hasn't he? And his running style is definitely similar to Lawrence. There was a goal against Brentford, I think, where he scored a few of those where he just totally outpaces everyone, knocks the ball kind of 20 yards ahead and just outruns everyone.
And then up the field, but against Stoke, he cut inside, and it was straight out of Lawrence's playbook. He let one rip. There was nothing else on, so he said, right, I'll just take the net off instead. And I think it was their opening goal against Stoke. It was superb. It had Lawrence written all over it. And that's the thing. He's augmenting his game now. It's no longer just about pace. They're talking about him reading his game well, timing his runs well. His biggest problems have been his finishing, because he's so quick that he's got no one to support him. But that is now being worked on. And also the surprise element has gone, so teams are now onto him, so he's now getting double marked as well. But that is still not holding him back. He's able to, he's able to find space, and he's able to read defenders really, really well. So if he is doubled up on, he knows how to deal with it. He's also very good. Two of the Stoke players in the 3-1 defeat recently were sent off. They were down to 9 men at the end of it. One was given was rescinded, which was Martin Zindi, because it was he was sent off for a professional foul, was denying a goal scoring opportunity, and it was overturned. But there was a red card for that, and then there was another player picked up two yellows, but it was all for fouls on James.
Right. Trying to clip him when he was in full flight.
He was out on the wing, and the guy literally he put his arm around his shoulder, around his neck, kind of thing, and just tried to yank him back. And it's to say he can create set pieces. He can, he can draw fouls basically out of people as well. But Lambert will have a very specific plan for him, and I wouldn't be surprised if I don't know whether it's the old Josh Emmanuel debate again. I love Josh, but Lambert might feel maybe someone like James Bree and somebody more defensively minded in front to come back and double up as well, just to shut that flank down almost. That's certainly what Mick would have done. I don't know whether Lambert will.
Can he play inverted as well, James? Can he swap with Dyer?
I haven't seen that happen, actually. No, it seems to be just on the left at the moment.
So it's not a fully kind of fluid front four or five, is it? No.
No, it's not. I think they seem to like to stretch the pitch where they can, actually. But from the highlight, I've only looked at about sort of four or five of the highlights clips from going back. And you look at the shirt numbers and everything, and it generally, in the highlights anyway, seems to be popping up on, he's staying on his side of the field as well. He is very left-sided. But again, when you've got someone like Kyle Naughton behind you, that, again, you've got, as we talked about with Roberts and Dyer, you've got an experienced and a young player working together, and that again, you've got that. That's a lovely balance. It really is.
Indeed.
A few fringe players worth mentioning. Barry McKay, who they
really linked with. Yeah,
we were linked with as well. He's got 5 assists. I think Salinas only the
two goals though.
Yeah, that's it.
Are we going to talk about Corny Baker Richardson, by the way?
Yeah, very briefly. Yeah,
Leamington alumni.
Indeed, yes, he's
on the breaks.
Coventry youth product as well.
Oh, there you go. I didn't even know that. Sorry, let's go back to McKay. Getting ahead of myself.
Again, it could be with them being mid-table, they may well feature. Some of these guys may feature, so we'll just briefly touch on them. He's not liked McKay, not one of my most disliked Swans players ever. Not one to have around in a scrap, not one to have in the trenches. Handy to relieve tired legs when we're well on top. They talk about lacking courage and commitment. He should be the finished product by now. How old is McKay, actually? Let's check his age. He's 24, 3 sub appearances in the last 8 games, nothing else. Very much a fringe player. Came from Forest last year, ex-Rangers. Lightweight, disappears for long stretches. Capable of the sublime, although only usually when under little pressure. They don't like him. He doesn't like to get stuck in. So that's pretty damning, actually. Yeah. The other two worth mentioning, we'll talk about briefly Joel Osorio, who is really a winger but could play as a striker as well. Now, he's quite young, so you have to allow for that with him. Again, 3 sub-appearances, may well feature. July signing from the Sunderland, and I remember him being in the Sunderland setup last year when he was way too young.
He was the big name, wasn't he? I remember it from the documentary, actually. Yeah. Really highly rated.
Yeah, and ideally they'd like him to replace Dyer on the right, but he's nowhere near it yet. Playing with Asoro is like playing with 10 men. He does offer genuine width, but we need to stick with him. He's got hellish pace, but needs coaching and guidance. The season has passed him by to some degree. He maybe needs a proper pre-season so he can settle in. They're hoping Potter can get the best out of him, but he was only 19. He has time on his side. The game without the ball at his feet seems new to him. That was an interesting insight. You know, so with the ball, yeah, he might be good, and he might have these flashes. We've all seen it with wingers. It's a classic thing. He's a winger come striker. He's described mostly as a striker, but I think they see him as a right winger, to be honest. And on to Courtney Baker Richardson, who is quite a big unit that's not afraid to get stuck in, but the screaming issue is lack of quality, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
not up to standard that we need.
It's quite a jump that he made.
Yeah, it could be that he needs a season to learn. We don't know what's going on at the training pitch, so it could be that he's having to learn.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Championship football there, with a view to next season then coming through, because you could see the model of striker he is, given everything else that they've got, that he could actually fit in quite nicely. But bottling the odd challenge, second to most things, and needs to control his approach a little bit as well.
Yeah,
but
he got a red card for a pretty nasty challenge, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, that's right. Back in the autumn, but he has got the right attitude to deal with some of the thugs, because they lack physicality, this team. So if he can broaden his wider game, and some of the other players are thinking they need to be more physical and bulk up, Baker Richardson doesn't need to do that. He actually needs to just do a lot more ball work, and you know, but in that environment, that may yet still happen. But he's very much a fringe option at the moment. What's he played recently? Again, 3 substitute appearances in the last 8 games. So so there we go. There's a few other side players. Luciano Narsing, he's a right winger. I'm not sure we'll see him. Yeah, and Danda, he's a attacking midfielder. These are all kind of very young, 20. But Narsing actually is 28. He's drifted out. He hasn't broken into the team at all. Declan John might feature at left back as well if Norton is not fit, the left back, as he was. He picked up a knock against Queen's Park Rangers. But I would say of the fringe players, possibly Mackay, possibly Osoro, possibly Baker Richardson, they'd be the 3 most likely to kind of drift into the team. We'll
Brilliant
see.
Brilliant stuff, Harry. Mm. How can you not know what's going to happen on Monday now with Harry's expert insights there? Thank you for that. That was really good. Should we do Daryl's combined 11 briefly?
Oh, yes, let's get that up. Yep.
Let's get... So again, we're kind of struggling with options there. So it's the fabled 3-4-4 formation that
Formation,
everyone
yes.
knows very well.
Yes, indeed,
Brian
which
Murphy,
is becoming known and loved. We're going to be into the 2-3-5 soon. We're going to be bringing back the wing halves again, but we'll pass on that for now. Yes. So Brian Murphy in goal.
Yeah, solid goalkeeper. I thought he was decent with us. I think he left though. On a free transfer, he could have stayed and played and ended up going on sitting on
He
QPR's
played.
bench in the Premier League, I think.
No, he was suspect in the air. I remember
he wasn't
played for
tall,
Port.
But, yeah.
He played for Portsmouth against us in the FA Cup, if I'm not mistaken. And
okay.
Portsmouth fans talked about him being suspect aerially, and one of the goals I think we got back in this was in the draw in the first leg was an aerial ball. I'm pretty certain about that, actually. But he was at Swansea. I mean, he goes back. I mean, he was at Swansea 05, 06. He's in his mid-30s now, I think. Yeah. I think he's still... I think he might be with Cardiff now, actually. He's very much a backup player, but he's still playing, definitely.
Still fine.
Yeah.
The other option there is Lee Bracey.
You
know, Lee Bracey never played a game for us. The back three, Andy Legg, he of the long throw, and... summariser for us down in the southwest. Cameron Carter-Vickers, aforementioned Carter-Vickers, and Jim Feeney's a name I don't know.
Yeah, Jim Feeney played for one of the post-war era. Played 46-50, I think, for Swansea, and then left Swansea and came across to us and spent 6 years at Town. So I know very little about him. I'm afraid tried to dig around, but there's not much on him. We have a little bit more on one of the other old school players we'll come on to later. Mm. But Vickers, Carter Vickers, Legg, Feeney, that's a decent enough back three, I suppose. The midfield is a little bit unbalanced as well. There's three midfielders, but there's a lot of width in there.
I think we'll so Mr. Cellino will lob into the middle of the other two,
it becomes self-evident why.
Paul Anderson and Gwion Edwards.
Yeah.
I don't remember Anderson spell at Swansea. I do hope Daryl's got that one right.
No, he has. It was a Liverpool loan. No, it was very peripheral.
Oh, was it? Okay, fine.
It was early in his career when he was coming through. I think he started at Liverpool and he played on loan for Swansea very briefly. But, he didn't linger long in the memory. And just when we were talking about the Preston one about having a Richard Chaplow day. Well, of course, there's a Paul Anderson day, of course, as well.
Of course there is. Yeah,
there
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
Of course, it does work, this idea. You know, somebody who'd scored a defining goal, you know, a moment in history that we could kind of grasp
Saint
onto.
St.
Paul, you know, the feast of Paul Anderson or whatever.
You celebrate St. Paul's Day by punching your ceiling and making a hole, and then Paul Anderson pays to repair it for you. should we go through the front four? Daryl will tweet this out and probably undo the change that we're making. But we are going to go with Jason Scotland, Rory Fallon, Shefki Kuchi, and the other player that you mentioned, the old school player, Sammy McCrory. Anything to tell us about Sammy McCrory?
Daryl gets the credit for this. Daryl did a bit of digging around. McCrory is another post-war player. He played for Swansea immediately after the war, 46-49, and then came across to Town from there. He spent about 3 years with us. The city joined in March 1950. This is from Wiki, but it's interesting. He didn't get off to a great start with the Tractor Boys. He became the first Ipswich player to be sent off in league football in a match against Aldershot. However, the following season, he was the top goal scorer in all competitions and made over 100 appearances. He then had with Plymouth, and then he also interestingly scored. He moved to Southend and he scored the first ever goal at Roots Hall against Norwich City. He's in.
So, first ever Ipswich Town League football red card was that?
Yeah. But he also scored against Norwich, so that he's got to go in. Yep.
Saint Sammy's Day.
Saint Sammy's Day. Mm.
There are some other options on the bench, striking wise. Lee Chapman was the player that Daryl put in, and we've bumped off mainly for his Ipswich spell. Tommy Lang is in there. That's another name that won't be familiar.
Yeah, he's pre and post war again. I think not one who lived long in the memory. He played for Swansea before the war, 37-38, and then that immediate post war season he came across to Town. But nothing notable there.
Frank Nublay, as he likes to be called.
Bless him.
Tamás Priskin, who is also in the Preston team, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was,
And Robin Turner, he was in the 70s, wasn't he? 70s team, I think.
That's right, he was with us. I looked up, I could be wrong on this, but I checked, double checked this a few places. He was with us from 1973. Dave will know. We need to, in case we're wrong on this. He was with us for about 12 years. I think he was very much a fringe squad player. He was with us for a long time. I may have got that wrong from the research. I looked it up on not just Wiki, but on different other sources. But he went to Swansea very briefly after that. But I think he was very much in the background. But as I say, shoot me down in flames if you've got that wrong. But
I think he's, he was a bench player, wasn't he? And he's always in the photos. I remember having a the match of the day Ipswich Town history video, and he was always there celebrating with the player who just scored the goal, rather than maybe being involved in the action himself.
Yeah,
but,
he's very much a backup.
Another good bit of research there from Darrell. Yeah. Excellent.
Interesting.
Stuff.
I do like that midfield of Anderson, Selina, and Edwards. You know, Selina on his own in a midfield with two wingers would be, you just pay to watch him. Just, you know, because given how profligate he can be on the ball, your poor defenders would be left wide open with no protection whatsoever. You'd be looking for Coochie to drop back, actually, to kind of work. I thought Scotland and Coochie together would work as a nice pairing, actually, up front, because Scotland could really hammer up against the defensive line.
We need a few to drop as well, don't we?
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, and Coochie playing in around off him. That would work quite nicely. But thank you, Darrell. Great team. Thank you.
Let's finish off with some questions. And there's one that I'm going to apologise for immediately, because I'm going to bail out on the answering this one, from Gabriel Sutton, Harry. And I'm hoping you've done your homework on this one, because otherwise we might have to defer this one until Sheffield United. The young player we're most excited to see or get a chance to see in League One. Did you do your research on this one?
I haven't done that much, no. When I saw the question, I was thinking more from an Ipswich point of view rather than from an opposition team point of view.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's do it that way round, and maybe maybe we'll come back and do it with
come back to us, Gabriel, on that
opposition.
We just don't have that. I just don't think we have the data yet on League One to be able to come up with a decent, rather than just wild stabs in the dark. We need to do some more homework. But for Sheffield United next week, I promise we'll
let's do that.
I'll come up at a 3 or 4 once I've had.
I'll do the same. And they'll all play for Coventry City. but the young player of ours that you're looking forward to, I think we've talked about Andre Dizel before and Teddy Bishop, the questions from last time around. Any other names that we've not mentioned?
Well, it's Lancaster and Downs for me. We talked about this in the Preston show, that somebody could come through out of nowhere. I just have a feeling about Downs. I just have a feeling he could absolutely take that league by the scruff of the neck. We'll see.
Good stuff. Yeah. Blue Soap, as threatened previously, what is your favourite wine with dinner?
How highbrow do we want to go on this? This is the question. Right, general wine is a New Zealand Pinot Noir is the default, if anything else. But there are, we all have phases, you go through different wines, trying different ideas out. But there is a really high class white Burgundy wine called Pouligny Montrachet. Now, if you want a really decent wine, there is nothing like it. There really isn't. It's quite brilliant. It's that's one I'd drop in. But
I feel like a wine spin-off podcast is needed.
We all have phases. These things need to be explored. But generally, red Pinot Noir, Pinot Noir, I should say, that's what I'd go for. I don't know where you'd stand.
I'm a big fan of a Malbec. Harry.
Oh, Malbec's nice.
Yeah.
Malbec's nice.
I'm more of a red man than a white man. Yeah. The older I get, particularly in the summer, I seem to be enjoying white wine a lot more. So, but I'll go with a Malbec because it sounds like I know what I'm talking about. Tim Pashley, our good mate Tim, the reason we didn't ask this for the last time around will become clear now. I'll start with the second half of his question. Do you do like my family and save a Christmas pudding for Easter?
More food.
Odd tradition. Yeah, the food stuff. Do you save a Christmas pudding for Easter?
I've got a confession. I don't know where you stand on this. Christmas pudding for me is a bit like an away day at Reading.
I'll stick this on the shit list with Roy Keane, shall we?
Exactly. You know, the idea of having Christmas pudding with Roy Keane would not really make me in at the Medeski Stadium. We're building up a doomsday scenario here. I just don't Christmas pudding. I don't know. I think we can confirm it's an odd tradition, can't we? It is an odd tradition.
I've never heard that before, Tim.
As I say, my partner does like Christmas pudding. She'll happily wolf it down, but we've never kept it. I can imagine it'd be lovely though, because it's all the juices have all marinated through. I remember my mum making it as a child back in the 60s. 60s, and the smell in the kitchen was absolutely gorgeous. But no, it's never done it for me.
Well, I hope the Pashley clan or whoever have enjoyed their Christmas with Tim. He asks, can we do the Swansea double? We didn't mention this before. But there is an opportunity here for a double this season.
A double, which would just be ridiculous, wouldn't it be? It depends. I was thinking about this before properly having a look at Swansea, and the parallel I was coming up with was Hull, in that Hull are a bit Jekyll and Hyde. They have a lot of really good individual players, but and they can turn up, but just as equally they can not turn up. As I say, unfortunately we got Hull twice when they turned up. So if the QPR version turns up, there's every chance that we could, the team that lost 4-0 to QPR, there's every chance we could do the double, actually. You've got to look at that. I know I keep banging on about it, but it's worth looking at that QPR highlights video just to watch some of the defending. It was proper car crash defending.
I might clip that bit that you've talked about and put it in sepia or something, and kind of put a 60s commentator over it. Do a Kenneth Wolstenholme impression over the top of it.
It is Charlie stuff. It really is. Yeah. Well,
fingers crossed for an Easter miracle there, Tim.
That would be brilliant.
Mullet, wow, we're getting... Jesus said, I am the light and the resurrection. Who or what will be our light and resurrection between now and the start of the season?
Big question. To me, if you're using that parallel of death and resurrection, and you could talk about relegation being the death, the pre-season is the days in between... We're getting into theology.
Oh, here we go, Harry.
Between Good Friday and Easter Sunday, and then resurrection is next season. So in which case, then the pre-season Germany tour is the moment of light in that sense. But it won't happen overnight, whereas with the resurrection happened in very quickly, this won't happen overnight. And I'm not sure one signing will bring about its reality. It will emerge. I think it's going to emerge. We talked about this at the Preston game, and it was talked about on the flagship show. Rather than an immediate blast, I actually want to see momentum, and I'll keep banging on about that. I want to see us grow in momentum as the season goes on, because that's what's going to turn it around. Yeah, I don't want to. If you go out like a greyhound and then suddenly slow down, I would be more worried. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, there we go.
I'll combine my answer into one name. Person who needs to be a resurrection or have a resurrection in our squad, and who could be our light in League One, Emyr Hughes.
Oh God!
Pronounced in the Welsh way. Hughes.
Oh, of course.
Mullet also adds Easter eggs or big bars of chocolate. Mm. If so, who would like to sponsor the pod? Well, it's got to be something by Cadbury's, right?
Yeah,
right, off the
totally,
bat.
Yes, totally agree. Absolutely, that's what I've written down. I'm quite old school. Cadbury's will do for me. Yep.
Cadbury's eggs. I seem to be better than the chocolate. Dairy milk chocolate as an egg. To me, seems to taste better. I don't know why.
I think it's a childhood thing. It's that thing when you open the package and you break open the two halves, and the smell of chocolatey air that comes out. You just don't get that with a chocolate bar. It's the theatre of it as well. The other thing I've written down again. This is going into my Roy Keane list. Not American chocolate and not Galaxy. I just don't get that. And I apologise to Galaxy. I'm sure they make very fine product and many of you like it, but I just don't get Galaxy chocolate at all. Yeah, Easter eggs every time, though, definitely. Yeah.
We would welcome a sponsor from Cadbury's. Buttons. Easter eggs, maybe, I don't know. Edward Croft, what suits us more, 4-3-3 or 4-1-2-1-2 diamond? Could Edwards play up front alongside Kwana, Harrison in a diamond? What formation will Lambert want to implement now for next season? Do you think Lambert's going to stick with this kind of 4-3-3 that he's been using throughout the season, or do we need to kind of move to two up front, because it seemed to work in the second half against Birmingham?
That's another $64,000 question. It definitely, one up front didn't work against Brentford. I think given what we have, it's got to be a diamond, because it gives Kwana a foil in Jackson, in Edwards, in someone to play off. And it makes better use of our mad number of midfielders and our lack of wingers. So you get some balance within what we have, even though it then just does put the fullbacks, and it does make more demands of the central midfielders. It would be interesting, as I say, to see Edwards playing more regularly off a striker, to see if they could actually build some sort of relationship. The problem with Edwards playing off a striker is that when you play more centrally, it's less about pace. You don't have as much space to work with. It's more about technique and anticipation. So that's what you've got to make it to call on Edwards. Do you want him out there for his pace? Do you want him out there for what he can do technically in the team? I would say for now, if we didn't change anything next season, I would play a diamond. But let's see what striker. Let's see what we talked about. Swansea trying to configure their final third. I'm fascinated to see what Lampard does over the summer with that.
Yeah, if we have a better striker in that in the number nine position and get players around him, I don't think I'm necessarily against the formation that Lampard's been going with. But at the moment, it does still feel that we're too isolated up front. So maybe he'll change it. Andy Grimes on the pitch. Where has Lampard gone wrong? I feel we have to talk about an inability to win since he came, or not as many as perhaps people were hoping, if I can reword the question. Regardless of the situation he inherited, I can't help feeling bitterly disappointed that we didn't put up more of a fight. Again, Andy, apologies for editing your question, but I feel it's only fair to provide some balance there on that point. Did you feel that we didn't put up much of a fight under Lampard, or this lack of turning draws into wins, which we did reference and press them?
Yeah, it's one of those things. If you know, if you turn 10 of those draws into wins, literally those 10 goals. I mean, I saw the Bristol City game. That was so typified games where we probably had 55%, 60% of the game, but we couldn't quite get that half goal in terms of our play into a full goal. You know, which it was. That's probably what's done for us in the end. I keep going back to this. I'm unhappy criticising Lampard given the Messi inherited, Rich. I really feel, you know, it's you cannot overstate the damage that was done to that squad, the lack of experience, the lack of quality that he inherited, the lack of a loan window, the inability then to bring in sufficient reinforcements that didn't get injured in January. It's just everything just went against him. So I'll cut him that amount of slack. That said, what would I pick up on? I don't see Quanah as a striker. He's a strange. I was watching him against Brentford. He's a winger, but he has the pace of Andy Carroll. Mullet, as I said before, memorably described him as like Daryl Murphy in slow motion. But I can't actually shake off a Frank Nubel comparison as well with Quanah. Okay. There's something. He seems to be in that bit of the Venn diagram more than anything else. But we've no one else, and he has been very selfless. He's been heroic. He's scored a couple of good goals. But I would love to see him as a proper winger, just spinning crosses and putting assists in. But hey ho. But then we've had no Will Keane, we've had no Ellis Harrison, he's had no choice. The only other comment I'd add in, come back to me on both of these, is I would have loved to have seen him trust Josh Emmanuel a little bit more. There's something about people not, I don't know, I think Josh is a great right back, but there's something about it, there's some trust issue there. I don't know quite what it is with managers and him, because I think he's got the athleticism, and the only way, a bit like with Swansea we were talking about, he needs experience, and he needs experience on the pitch with this group of players to iron out the creases. There we go.
Yeah, interesting stuff there, Aaron. I totally agree with you in terms of Lambert. The expectations of Lambert are on when he came in after the start that we had in the squad that he inherited. It is about next season for me. The only things and the other mitigating circumstance really is Lambert can't run onto the pitch and put away the chances that our strikers have missed. We're talking really fine margins, aren't we? The run of draws, the one-all draws that we had. There's always a moment in a match where someone has the chance to put something in the net, and we haven't taken it. We haven't had the quality to do that. And I don't think that's Lambert's fault. He has made the best of that situation with what he could bring in January and what was in the club to begin with. So I think, Andy, I think we just need to be patient. We need to accept that the writing was probably on the wall when Lambert came in. Yeah. It was always looking like an impossible challenge, and it's proven to be that way. A couple more to finish. Stevens asked us quite an expansive question about any of the clubs that have gone down in a similar state to us and where they are now. I think that probably merits a bit of research, Stephen. I don't think, off the top of my head, there's obviously been plenty of clubs in a similar position to us in terms of stature that have gone down, but probably we need to think about that one a little bit more rather than give you an instant
answer. I'll have a look back over the last 10 years. It's the two things, going back to why do teams go down, the teams go down because they're not big enough, or teams go down because they're not well run, going back to the owners relegate clubs thing. And I guess the Ovals and the Burtons, they tend to go down though with last minute heroics. They didn't go down, they weren't badly relegated, they were good League One teams hanging on for dear life, which is what you could argue you're seeing with Millwall, Wigan and Rotherham at the moment. They're all kind of good League One teams, but they're just, you know, something's got to give somewhere. It's an interesting one. Can I I'm going to have a little look into that during the week.
And I think come Gabe, back to that Gabriel one on... Sutton's question and Stephen, yeah. Stephen McCafferty, thank you for the question, Stephen. And I think yeah. both of us will do a little bit of a digging on both of those and we'll come back and address yeah. those next week. Yeah. Andy Wheaton, I hear fans worried about us being competitive in League One. I assume that means not competitive. Is that a well-founded concern or just fans lacking confidence in our team's ability?
No,
similar to our own team's confidence this
yeah.
season.
No, we are being properly relegated and for a good reason, Rich. We really are. Instead yeah. of Tandy
this
as
confidence
well.
Thing is really important yeah. as well. And I, yeah. I think the guys in the flagship last week were talking about it mm-hmm. as well. You know, we ideally need to win the first game. I'd take your point that maybe if there's a run of draws or, you know, maybe the, an odd defeat in there and suddenly things start to mm. click into gear, I think that'd be good. But if we go a few weeks into the season without a win, I think nerves will start to grow. So
yeah.
And, and that comes after a season and a half, at least, of us just being fairly middling and it getting yeah. steadily worse. So I don't think it's wrong to be lacking confidence in our ability to rock up in League One and smash it. We need to put our trust in Lambo that he's got a plan to be able to turn things around, though.
Yeah, I agree. It could well be as well. I possibly be a bit negative about this, but having had, and this the rot did go back to when, as things fell apart under Mick the previous season, you know, it does take you, it takes it out of us as supporters as well, confidence wise, and you feel, oh God, you know, you're almost conditioned into accepting that this is going to be a struggle, it's going to be a battle. You know, we should have more than enough to be competitive against the bottom half sides, and it's a question of regrouping and then looking at, it's the Charltons and the Peterboroughs, whoever misses out from Barnsley, Sunderland, Portsmouth, and whoever gets relegated with us. Bolton coming down is a reassurance, because I'm not sure their new owner will necessarily... We'll see. Let's not prejudge that.
If he passes the fit and proper yeah. test as well.
Yes, yeah, that's true. But that's but you're looking at that. That's who you're benchmarking yourself against, I guess, next season. But hopefully, it wouldn't it be great to have three wins on the spin? Have one of those Saturday, Tuesday, Saturdays where you get 9 points, mm-hmm. and then you're suddenly right. Okay, lads, we're back in the room. That would be brilliant.
Great
show.
That
would be brilliant. Yeah.
Sam Chapman asks about season tickets. We kind of talked about that in the last pod, Sam, and we will talk about it in the flagship as well. But he asks if we are going to play the ball out from the back next season, because Lambert did try to do that and abandon that fairly, you know, a few weeks into the experiment of the split centre backs. Will that mean a change of goalie? And who do we drop to get Wolfenden in the team? Could we go 5-3-2? So I guess there's three things there. Number one is, do we think we need a change of keeper? Do we think we need to play out of the back in League One? And two, if we want to play Luke Wolfenden, and if we do want to play Luke Wolfenden, do we drop him in instead of one of Nsiala, Collins or Chambers, or do we go maybe three at the back?
Good, that's a really good question. I think I don't know what you think, Rich. Part A of the question, it echoes a bit what's going on at Swansea, in that they've decided on a model of play under Potter, and they're now moving the team in the direction of that model of play. Now, assuming that, because that's ultimately how you go up and stay up and make it sustained when you get there. So on that basis, I think if that's the way Lambert wants to play, he'll be able to do it more easily. It was impossible to do in the Championship. We all remember that. But the West Brom game on television, where they were double marking our fullbacks, you know, poor Bart had no choice. But I always call it the postage stamp, where you put all the players in the postage stamp formation and you for the goal kick. We were having to go back to that. In League One, I think we would be in a position to be able to play out from the back with more facility. I would hope so anyway. Changing to a wing back system is a huge thing to do, because it puts a back three. It needs way more coordinating than a back four or a back two, and also the two wide players in a back three are usually then isolated. They're almost quasi fullback, quasi centre backs. They're not out and out centre backs. So before you get into saying, can Luke Wolfenden play in the back three, you're looking, okay, do we have three mobile centre-backs, one who can do the sitting, and then the other two. I mean, Sheffield United, when they play with full-backs, O'Connell, usually whoever's, the two wider of the centre-backs don't just sit, they will overload the flanks as well. So you've got to look at our centre-backs to decide if they actually have that in their game. The argument in favour of playing with wing-backs is the fact that we don't have a huge amount of width and we have good centre-backs, so you could operate that way. You've got two strikers and one in behind. So,
and I think Kenlock and Emmanuel actually probably function much better up the pitch as well, rather than being orthodox fullbacks.
Yeah. Certainly Kenlock. I think Josh does too, but we haven't seen enough of that. I think he could do. But the question then is, what is the nature? Are you going to have just three static centre-backs? or are they prepared to you know, just how, what's the mobility question with those? Because to me, Chambers and Nciala and probably Collins are probably, they would be the sitters. And, you know, with Jonas disappearing, because he would do the job brilliantly as a left centre back in a three. And I don't know enough about Wolfenden. Whether he has that mobility as well to be able to, again, push out. And, you know, you're looking for players who did that Richard Keogh thing of not just sitting with the ball, but actually translating it up into midfield. Pitch, yeah. No, my instinct is to go to back four.
I agree there. And in terms of Sam's point about playing out from the back, I don't think the issue is necessarily Bart. It's the fact the team's figured it out and figured out how to nullify us from doing it. So I don't think there's a need for a change of keeper there. There might be a need for a change of keeper if we sell Bart. And finally, Luke Penning, who's doing some really interesting video posts on possible transfer targets and all that kind of stuff, mentions one of those names that we've heard about before. Not sure how much you know, but would you take Tranmere Rovers striker James Norwood as a potential striking option with his contract up in the summer? Top goal scorer in League Two. He's seen him. He rates him. He's done a video. Yeah. I've retweeted it. I think we're interested there. I think that is something that
I've had a look on the Tranmere forums as well. He looks good in the highlights packages I've seen. I saw the videos that have gone up. They really look good. And Lambert obviously used that phrase he used in his press conference the other day, that little bit up top is how he described it. And in that sense, it's not just, he seems to fit not just the brief in terms of his scoring record, but also in terms of the type of striker that we're looking for, to balance what else we have. So in League One, you know, there isn't that much, there isn't the same daylight between League One and League Two as there is between League One and the Championship. So it would be a relatively low risk transition, as it were. And I don't think we've anybody coming through ourselves, from what I can see in the under-23s, or, you know, because that's the other thing. You've got to say, no point bringing these guys in if we've got some really good people coming through at the back, you know.
From the
youth teams, exactly. That Morris, possibly. That's who you're benchmarking him against, I would say, rather than just getting him in because, we did that last summer and look where it got us. But Norwood, from what I've seen, he's certainly merits serious consideration, I would say. Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think in League One, those kind of punts are probably more likely to pay off than him making the two division step, which is what we've seen with Caden Jackson. So
You get the 40 games plus the Czech Trade Trophy of all these wonderful games where they can all actually play competitively with each other and sort of forge that identity.
And no fee as well, which is something that is going to be very enticing to Marcus Evans, I think.
Marcus Evans, definitely.
Before we finish up with some plugs and all that kind of stuff, I need to, for those watching the video, I didn't mention my shirt. So I've got a shirt commemorating our FA Cup win over Swansea in, I think it was 2010, I think, possibly.
Yeah.
Not too many other shirts that I can pull out of the wardrobe for other victories over Swansea, because there's not too many. So imagine, if you can, that over my other shoulder is this season's magical Vegas monstrosity to mark our victory from Swansea back in October.
I think that's what you should do in the future. Just not have the shirt there, but it's the shirt that dare not speak its name. You won't get to use it very often
it's
anyway.
It's the shirt in your mind, everyone.
You'd be able to use it against three opponents, is it?
Yeah,
four?
Exactly right.
You know, exactly.
Well, who knows? It might be five or six by the time we get to this season, Harry.
Who knows?
Brilliant stuff.
Thank you.
Let's get some plugs from you. For Swansea, or blog for anything else, Twitter, all that jazz.
Should go up. The blog for Swansea, obviously they've got to play Rotherham at the time, so it should go up on some point on Saturday, I think. That's what I've talked with. That's what Phil and I've agreed. That'll be up on TWTD Saturday lunchtime. At the latest, it'll be up Easter Sunday lunchtime, but ahead of the Monday game. We'll see what happens against Rotherham tomorrow night with Swansea, and obviously we'll see what happens with us against Preston as well. And it'll all be linked on at Harry from Bath, which is my Twitter handle, and so everything that I do just gets you'll see the link on there as well.
Brilliant. And you can find me at Ips Rich and our channel at Blue Monday ITFC. Thank you again, Harry, for your sterling work as always. I was expecting us to be done and dusted in half an hour, but here we are with a good amount of questions as well. So thank you for those. And we will be back to talk Sheffield United as the season starts to draw to a close and we can start thinking about summer and League One and all that fun stuff. So thanks again, Harry.
Have a great Easter, everyone.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.